Hello and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast to the popular weekly title. I'm this week's host and the title staff writer, Jesse Billington, and on this glorious 1st of May, I'm joined by the two Jameses, content editor James Peen and managing editor James Sadlier, as well as our editor, David Simister. Gents, how are we all?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the sunshine and looking forward to having a bit of fun with my cars this weekend.
Has the sunshine finally reached the north? Because I know it hadn't really over the weekend.
Yeah, I went to the only place in the country that didn't seem to have glorious sunshine for Drive It Day. They had it in the north of Scotland, they had it in the West Country, they had it in the Midlands. But where I was in Cumbria, it wasn't raining, but it was just very overcast. I went over Kirkstone Pass and I was in fog for quite a while.
Oh, my
very
word.
Different scene, yeah. James and James, how are you both?
After you, Mr. Peen.
Oh, a game of you go first. No, I'm all good. Thanks very much.
We're so polite.
No, I've still got a very red neck from my Drive It Day shenanigans. So,
oh, yeah.
Very nice. Nice.
Yeah, it was contrasting to Mr. Simmons's weather. It was absolutely wonderful. And I did the London Classic Car Boot Sale near King's Cross on the Saturday for Drive It Day. And then I did Brooklyn's Drive It Day event on the Sunday. So I had a double hitter. And yeah, the sun was beating down, but both absolutely wonderful events. And I'd recommend anyone go to any of them if you can get to them, if you're in the London area.
Yeah, I also picked up a bit of sunburn while I was at Bicester Heritage as well. I think my face has finally stopped sort of looking quite so red, but I know my neck is still a little bit warm, let's say. But that's really what we're here to talk about. Obviously, we'll go through the usual introduction of how are the classics sitting on the driveways. Did anyone get theirs out for Drive It Day?
I couldn't. I was about to say I couldn't because the Polo has a petrol leak at the moment. So that's not too good. Apparently, it doesn't like being brimmed to the top. So there's something loose at the top of the petrol tank. So I'm investigating that now. So I couldn't take mine to Drive It Day, but that's my issue with the Polo at the moment. The exhaust has stayed on though, so it's not all bad.
Oh, well, just fill it to half tank each time, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm having to drive it. So it's got an MOT coming up, and I did take it down to the garage, and they said, yeah, it'll probably fail on a leaky. Well, it'll definitely fail on a leaky fuel tank. And they said, drive it around, get the petrol nice and low, and then what we'll do is we'll take the tank off with like hardly any fuel in and get that fixed. So that's something. So I just need to do it so that they, when they take it off, they don't get covered in petrol, basically.
Smart idea.
Yeah.
Not the price of petrol these days either. Can't be spilling that anyway.
Oh, tell me about it. I know, I was there with my kind of jerry can underneath trying to catch bits.
So with the classic sort of update out of the way, James, I know you've been sort of working on all of your cars in sort of over the weeks. Were any of them up and running for Drive It Day, or did you simply have to walk to Dawlish?
Sadly, I drove to Dawlish in a modern car, so parked in the car park of shame around the corner. Van still needs a few little wrinkles ironing out, so I didn't bother taking that because I wanted to get there. And the Beetle, I'm still waiting on my documentation from the DVLA. To register it. That's been just over 4 weeks now, which I believe is the lead time that you have to wait to register a vehicle. So I keep running to the post box every time I hear the door flap go, hoping it might be that, but no, still no joy.
Like an eager child awaiting something to be delivered, like, oh, has it come? No, it hasn't.
Yeah, it's like waiting for the Beano to arrive.
I'm sure if we wait any longer, we can at least spin it into a news story about DVLA failing to meet deadlines. But that's something for a different day and a different discussion. We'll move on then to Drive It Day. We've already alluded to it plentifully. And obviously, as we've already sort of hinted at, we've all been to various different corners of the country to enjoy classics out on the road. James, you've already said you were down in London, down at Brooklands. Look, Dave's even holding up.
Oh, there it is.
The beautiful front cover of this week's Classic Car Weekly, celebrating 2 decades of classics getting noticed on the road and doing important things and raising money for charity as well.
A Childline, yeah.
Yeah, it was very good indeed. So, David, we'll start with you and your report from Dale, Maine, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dalemain is where the Wigton Motor Club had their Drive It Day gathering, which is one of the biggest Drive It Day meets anywhere in the north of England. So there were more than 200 cars that turned up from right across northern England, southern Scotland as well. There was a really good variety of cars there. There was everything from a 1925 Albus 1250 right through to sort of modern McLaren's Ferraris. There was a modern day Alpine A110, which I think was probably the most modern car they allowed onto the lawn there. They did also allow my 1998 Toyota Avensis as well. They said that that counted, so which was all good. And again, the great thing with that meet is that yeah, you've got some superb road. You know, Ullswater is a lovely part of the world, and you've got the, yeah, I went once I'd finished doing the photographs, I took my car out and I took it for a Drive It Day run over the Kirkstone Pass, which is the road that goes up from Ullswater over the top pass to Helvellyn and down again to Windermere. And it's a superb drive. It just reminds you, and I was being followed by an MGA and a Lotus Elise the whole way across, so it was a really good run.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Lotus Elise.
Sweet, sweet car for such a perfect road. And obviously, you're a relative regular up at Dalemain as well, because it's where it plays host to a lot of the Coffee and Chrome meetings. So how many cars do you know if they had through the gate, or do we know numbers?
Sorry, on this is the Withall meet in Worcestershire. Yes, I do know that. So they had 205 cars through Classic through the door on for their Drive It Day meet, which again is in today, you know, this week's issue of CCW. 205 Classics is their biggest turnout yet for one of their meets, so it was a really good turnout for them as well.
That is good, isn't it? Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, our next meet, if anyone wants to come along, is on the 18th of May. It's free to go if you go for a car and driver, and we're always there as well, showing off our classics too. So it's a really good opportunity to show off your car and have a look at some historic bus action as well.
I'll be there with the Polo once they fix the petrol tank.
Very nice.
So yeah, on the 18th of May.
James, you enjoyed a double sort of adventure for Drive It Day, one in the City of Boot Fair and then again at Brooklands. What were the standout highlights for you from yours? Any absolutely fantastic cars or sort of brilliant little stories you discovered?
Saturday at the London Classic Car Boot Sale was fantastic, because it's quite spread out and it feels like a real kind of Camden Market feel, to it. With kind of classics kind of selling their wares, and you know, there's a cowboy boots and denim jackets being sold out of a, you know, 1970s Land Rover. It's brilliant. But then the people displaying their cars had you know, there's some real variety there. But they also had clubs there, so they had the an Austin Westminster owners club there, and they were all lined up, as well as some Ford kind of hot rod pickup trucks that had all knew each other, and they had some interesting cars there, and you know, even ones that wanted to look quite rustic, and you know, they stripped it down, painted it three different colors, and then sanded down the paintwork to get a real rustic effect. That was quite cool. And then they had like a mini section that was in one of the other backyards, which, when I say backyards, it doesn't sound very glamorous, but it's this kind of lovely kind of courtyard of shops and markets and things, and a lovely row of minis. So yeah, there was a lot to do. So that was good on the Saturday. And then the Sunday at Brooklands was brilliant too. But I think, given that was Drive It Day, it was itself, I think a lot of people were kind of arriving with their cars, hanging out for a couple of hours, chatting to other owners, and then heading out onto the road to enjoy the, you know, some of the, you know, the sunshine, and just get out in their car. And I met quite a few interesting owners on the Sunday, people who have owned their cars. You know, one guy had owned his dad had bought an MG Magnet, you know, brand new, and passed it on to him. There was a lot of you know, one owner from New Classics. So that was a lovely kind of, you know, lots of lovely stories on the Sunday of how people have kept these cars alive.
James Peen, anything from sort of down your end of the country that really stood out? Again, it looked absolutely fantastic weather with all the cars parked out on the lawn down in Teignmouth.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic one. Just a short jaunt down the M5, and I saw quite a lot of classics as well, going to and fro. So obviously, like whole driver day thing, it sort of, you know, the word was out there. There's a lot of people out just enjoying their cars on the Sunday. And then when I got into Teignmouth, I arrived at the same time as the local mod chapter. So I sort of walked into a steaming cloud of two-stroke, which was quite cool. So I do appreciate a scooter. I spoke to the organiser about 1:30, and they said they had capacity for about 200 cars, and they were about 218 at that point. So they were more than happy with the turnout. Highlight wise, there was a Martini livery 911, which really tickled my fancy.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. You know, when you walk around, you sort of, you pick your favorite of the show. That was my favorite until about 20 minutes later, when the chap rolled in his Austin 7 that had been a barn for 50 years.
Yeah.
Which I made a beeline for that one. That had the most amazing patina, the most oily engine I've ever seen, proper oily rag. And he proceeds to pull out his current MOT that it just passed. So that was a nice little, you know, pre-war cars still being out, enjoyed. There's quite a number of pre-war stuff, actually. So, yeah, showing the popularity of those, possibly on the increase. Certainly the perfect weather for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've got the all spread up in front of me. I can see the Philip Snell's freshly MOT'd Austin 7, and it does look very heavily patinated, but all the better for it, actually. It looks fantastic, and it's on the page, it's sat just beneath another Austin 7, which is in a far different state of affairs, but also just as enjoyable. But yeah, a great range of cars by the look of things. Meanwhile, over at Bicester Heritage, we were again, much like down south, we're up at capacity with full sort of 7,000 people through the gates to enjoy Drive It Day, with the car park absolutely rammed. Usually there's sort of a bit of a sort of more of a bias towards sort of the modern, just general car park, but we had both ends of Bicester open to sort of try and fill in people as fast as possible, and the classic car park was overflowing. It was the packed, most packed I've ever seen it. We had a couple of car clubs there. We had the Lancia Monte Carlo Club, actually, with they were there celebrating 50 years of the Monte Carlo. They had a little cake cutting ceremony, and they'd been over Oxfordshire way for their sort of technical sort of conference, and then all gone to the scramble on the Sunday morning. And their idea was to hopefully have 50 Monte Carlos to celebrate 50 years of the Monte Carlo. They were quite pleased when 55 made it along to the event, including two 037s and Jeremy Clarkson's one from the final episode of the Grand Tour, which was quite nice to see sort of fully restored and back on the road. And then afterwards, I believe they all went over to Oxfordshire to Clarkson's pub for a little pub lunch as well, and to sort of return his car home. So it was great to see sort of the car clubs out enjoying it, as well as just a brilliant array of other classics. I mean, a few that stood out to me, obviously American models, a lovely Buick Grand National, which was one of possibly about three or four that's in the UK, and the chap had bought it from an owner in Germany who had three of that F body. So he had the Pontiac and the Chevrolet. The Chevy was also the Monte Carlo, and the German owner was just like, I can't afford to keep all three of them in like a private garage in the center of Munich or something. And this chap was like, I'll take the Buick then, thank you. And his wife had a beautiful matching car with him, was a 1976 Pontiac Firebird as well, finished in golden wrought yellow, which was stunning in the bright sunshine. Another brilliant American car, although I say American car, this is actually built in South Africa, Port Elizabeth, was a 1958 Pontiac Strato Chief, and quite possibly the only one on the road in the UK. It was also at its first event since being imported over winter from South Africa. It was owned by the current owner's father, and he was like, I don't want the car anymore, looking to get rid of it. And he was like, well, why don't I take it? We'll keep it in the family. And it is pristine, really. It's clearly been sort of used and enjoyed, but otherwise really nicely maintained. There was actually a lot of cars out for the first time sort of this year, having enjoyed restorations. The Alvis, that also featured in the spread, the T21, was absolutely gorgeous, and the owner very kindly let me have a sort of a sit in it and have a poke around. And lots of very intricate work had gone into restoring and maintaining that. So some great stories uncovered, including a a Porsche 356A that was bought on a whim in Texas, and then the chap sort of restored it over a few years, and sort of over the restoration process, quite a long drawn out one, prices for 356s went through the roof. So he was like, oh, I'm glad I picked this up for the cheap when I did, just on a whim in Texas, which is another great story to find. But yeah, it was
a couple. I remember there's actually a guy at Drive It on Brooklands, who'd worked for British Airways for like 40 odd years, and had spent 11 years developing Concorde, or helping later development with Concorde. Obviously, it's a bit older than 40 years old now, I know. But they got him to photograph his Aston Martin underneath the Concorde, which was really nice for him. That was at Brooklands.
Yeah.
And we also, that was quite good fun. And then we also had a guy called Nick Carter, who had a Humber Imperial, which was in CCW back in 1999. So that's revisited CCW 26 years later.
Oh, back when I was just a wee Ben. I was barely two, no doubt.
Oh.
But that's a fun little car. I'll just flick back over to your spread. In fact, we somehow both managed to capture Lotus Elans as well, all with tops off, enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah,
annoyingly, my MG not ready enough to go to Drive It Day, which was like my original soft deadline. My dad did manage to get the Mustang out, though. He took that out to try and diagnose a misfire. So at least one of us in the family got to enjoy Drive It Day.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, elsewhere, we've obviously got a couple of pages of reader-submitted pictures as well, and there's some gems in there with Glee people really getting in the swing of things and getting out and enjoying things, of just going out for events and just going out for a nice drive as well. There's some really unique cars chosen there. There's the Morris J2 Highwayman really jumps out to me because they are such an interesting piece of sort of aesthetic design, especially as a motor caravan.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think the thing with our big Driver Day report is actually it covers a lot of things going on across the country, but again, it almost all there's so much more that beyond that, so we could have filled an entire issue and then more again with Driver Day, because people are all over the country. There's so many different runs, and people getting cars out and showing them off to the great British public. And the great thing is as well is that it will have raised an awful lot of money for Childline as well, which is the FBHVC's dedicated charity supporting the event as well.
Yeah, usually they reveal the number at the November Classic Motor Show, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they've raised, since they started that charity association, they've raised more than £177,000. By selling those Drive It Day plaques that you will have seen, that people will see a lot of during Drive It Day itself. So again, if you're buying one of those plaques for next year's Drive Day, in fact, you can still buy them now and put them on your classic anyway. You'll be raising money for good causes. So definitely worth a look if you want some of the rally plaque for your collection.
Yeah, I mean, last year was it £38,100 last year, which was really quite a nice round number. But I mean, we'll move then into sort of the impact of Driver Day over the past 20 years, sort of how it's evolved. And is there anyone on the team that sort of did the original Driver Day?
Yeah, Nick Larkin did.
Yes.
Our team Austin Cambridge owner. He's been doing it. I mean, I think certainly, James Pin, you will have been involved with some of the earlier Driver Day events, wouldn't you? I would have thought in your time on CCW.
Yeah, it was a couple. Going back a long time now, just sort of beyond the veil and the curtain in my mind, trying to think which ones. But yeah, I mean, I just think in recent years it's grown bigger and better. I think the awareness of it has just like gone through the roof, really.
Yeah, so certainly I remember, it was doing our big Drive It Day reports in Classic Car Week. I remember the very first one that we did in 2014, and again, the event's just grown and grown since then. So it's a huge initiative now, which sort of covers the whole of the UK, and we know that classic fans abroad, increasingly do it too as well.
Well, there's an idea. Can we perhaps lobby that one of us gets to go to an abroad event next year? Perhaps sort of like a Drive It Day in Malta, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. Yeah. Driving day Brazil, I'll be happy anywhere, really. Anywhere where the sun's shining.
The Barbados Classic Car Club might be having a meet. You never know.
There we go. Yeah, I remember when. I remember when I first started in 2010. You know, we talked about Driver Day and how we'd report on it, but as you guys have already said, it's so much bigger now. Back then, it was like, you know, well, we'll feature it, but it maybe got a couple of pages in our issue. And now I don't know. What did you do, a page count of how much Driver Day coverage there was, David? In this
we gave it 14 pages of pictures of people with their classic cars and stories behind them, which is two more than we did last year. But and again, that'll be among the bigger Driver Day reports we've done over the past decade or so, because it's such a big part. It's by far and away Britain's biggest classic car event.
And like you say, we had more to we could have shared, couldn't we? Page space, did we?
Absolutely. I mean, they might not be all in one place, but it is, when you think about it, the number of cars that are taking part, it's bigger than the Classic Motor Show, it's bigger than the Goodwood Revival, it's bigger than the Silverstone Festival, all these really big events. This is one huge, if you treat it as one huge event that takes place all over the country, it's the biggest celebration of classics. And the great thing is that to take part, you don't need to sort of pay money to get into a venue. You can literally just take your car out to the shops and get a pint of milk, and you are taking part in Driver Day.
It is a nice broad reaching event. I've just had a quick check of where we've got listeners, and if we really wanted to push the boat out, we could go to Miami for Driver Day next year and meet some listeners out there and do enjoy some Florida sunshine in April if we wanted to. Pop that one through on expenses. I'm sure they'll love to see that one coming. But
go to the Formula One at the same time if the dates marry up.
If the dates marry up, I'm certain we could see if we could take part in like the classic car parade that drives the drivers around beforehand. That'd be quite a story to write for an hour classics. But that's all still to be planned out in the future. But otherwise, it's been an absolutely brilliant Driver Day. And obviously, we've got plenty of coverage in the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly, alongside the usual sort of expert-led news and reviews and everything on the side. And I think we'll keep this week's podcast a little bit on the short side, because, of course, we are working to a deadline with the bank holiday ahead of us. So, gents, thank you very much for joining me for a quick recap of what we all got up to across Driver Day. It's been a pleasure.
As always.
Thank you. It's been great. I know. I'm kind of feel at a loss this weekend, because like this time last week, I was really looking forward to 2 days of car shows. And so, yeah, I need to go and go out and get my fix somewhere else. Well, I think I've got to fix the polo first. Yeah.
Mornington Historic Festival is on this weekend with 3 days of classic racing action. If no sporting bears are there, there's club displays and stands. So there is still classic action on across the country. And there's plenty more besides that. So,
When's everyone else's next event? What have you guys got planned next before we head off?
Hopefully a day at Mornington.
Oh, nice. What about you, David?
I'm not sure. I think certainly I'll be going to, there'll be Coffee and Chrome Meets, which is the big event held by Footman James. There's different events up and down the country. I might see if I can get myself to one of the local meets as well. That'd be a good one to do.
Well, definitely. How about you, Mr. Peen? Anything on the horizon for you?
I'm in an awing about my favourite Volkswagen show coming up on Sunday, Stanford Hall.
I was about to ask you about that, if you're going to go to that. Yeah, that's this Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, this Sunday coming. It's unfortunately, I've got the in-laws coming. They're imminently. As we're talking right now, I know they're sort of inboard. So I'd like to do it. Kind of toying about escaping to it. But if not, it's stuff of my own Volkswagen. But yeah, it's at the back of my mind. Quite well. Not even that far back, but I might well go to it on Sunday.
It's entry on the door, I believe, at that Stanford Hall as well, isn't it? You can't pre-book, I don't believe.
No, unless you're like a club or you're putting your car on the display, then yeah, you just turn up on the day and they've got a massive overflow field, which is a show in itself. Have they?
Oh, they're fantastic. I might try and see if I could sneak out myself. Yeah. I've really got to get the petrol low in that polo. So Stanford Hall might be the way to do it.
That'd be a good excuse to run the petrol down. Take it to Stanford Hall and back.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look at it there in all its glory for people who are watching the video podcast.
Did that go down well? People love a bread van in the Volkswagen scene, so I think you'd fit right in.
Yeah, they'd certainly smell me from a mile away with that petrol, that's for sure.
Yeah, you would have liked one of the displays at Bicester. Volkswagen was celebrating 50 years of the Polo, and it's I thought possibly in WRC as well, and they had one of each generation of the Polo lined up, as well as one of their rally Polos. So that was quite an interesting one to sort of stumble across and have a quick poke around. So yeah, there was.
I saw one on your lead picture in the issue, actually, Jesse. I recognise those front headlights anywhere.
Yes, yeah, just on the left-hand side, parked next to a rather lovely Aston Martin DBS, that is, as well, and a Chevrolet Camaro and a Frog Eye Sprite. The brilliant variety that you get at all these classic car events, and plenty more besides. But anyway, we're rambling on, and we've got plenty of Classic Car Weekly still to put together. So we'll leave you, the listener, to go out and enjoy the early May sunshine now, and we will get cracking on next week's Classic Car Weekly. Gents, thank you very much for joining me. And
thank you.
Back again next week for more of the same.